Welcome, 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 everybody, to the Hockey Think Tank podcast brought to you by the HockeyThinkTank.com, a website for all players, parents, and coaches to go for a little bit of education and a little bit of inspiration regarding the greatest game on the planet. On tonight's podcast episode, we go through our mailbag of questions, and thank you to everybody who has contacted us over social media on Twitter and Instagram. Also, we had a few people email and text us some questions as well, and we had a lot of great questions, a lot of them that really made Jeff and I think about things a little bit outside the box and, you know, not these cookie cutter kind of easy softball questions. So really appreciate everybody that forwarded some questions to us. And before we get to those questions, though, let's bring in my partner, Jeff Lavecchio, the protein man himself. What's going on, Jeff, today?
Oh, yeah.
What was that? Yeah.
I don't know.
That was like the Kool-Aid guy.
Well, Dane Cook used to do this this skit about the Kool-Aid guy, and that's where – I don't know why that just popped in my head. But anyways, I had a long day, a little slap happy. Worked with a bunch of teams and had my teams practice. Had a kid at 6 a.m. before school because the kid just loves working out. He's a little beast. Shout out to G-Bone. You know who you are. But, yeah, having a good day. And, man, like some of these questions we got, like I was like, wow, these are such good questions. I'm a little bit nervous to even talk about these. But, I mean, I just think we I know we got to go over the last few podcasts first, but then after that, we're going to dig right in.
Yeah, I love it. So this is going to be an interesting episode for us because both of us are slap happy right now. You tell about your day. Yesterday, I flew back from Portland, Oregon with a sick 2-year-old. So had about 7 hours on two different flights there. Got right into a car, drove to Pittsburgh, did some team building with Robert Morris University yesterday. This morning, and just got back a couple hours ago. So about 11 hours in a car, about 11 hours on flights and airports. So we're ready to freaking get after it here today. So unreal episode here for all the listeners.
Yeah. And I just took a picture of my screen and what you're wearing right now so that when this podcast airs, I can say this is what I was talking about at this moment in time because everyone needs to see what you're wearing. I'm not even going to say what it is. They're just going to have to see the photo tomorrow because it's just making me giggle.
This is an unbelievable sweater, dude.
Hey, classic. Love it. I can't believe that you're an adult wearing that. It is amazing right now.
Adult is just my age. There's nothing real adult about me. Height-wise, maturity-wise, all that kind of stuff.
I've been telling people like the last week, I have an 18-year-old's like mindset, a 50-year-old's body, but I'm 33.
A 50-year-old's body?
Like my joints and like just from like, you know, getting beat up playing hockey my whole life and
gotcha.
Running to the boards.
Gotcha.
But no. My body looks like a Greek god.
I was
talking about feeling. But looks beautiful, let me tell you. All right, let's talk about the Bob Mancini thing because I know that we have a couple things we got to clear up a little bit. Maybe it was my fault, probably your fault.
Definitely my fault.
About maybe sometimes we need to be a little more concise with how we're saying things because you and I know what we're saying to each other and how we mean it, but some things may be getting misconstrued. So let's kind of go over that.
Yeah, no, I think we got a lot of feedback from this episode, and whenever people from USA Hockey are talking, you know, typically there's going to be people that have strong opinions about it, and for good reason too. I mean, people are passionate about hockey, people are passionate about development, so you know, a lot of the feedback that we got was great, and I think it's really important to talk about in terms of hockey development. Like, there's a middle ground, and I don't want to say compromise, but there's certainly a middle ground with a lot of the things that we talk about. You know, when we talked about the entrepreneurs, when we talk about summer hockey and things like that, even when we talk about cross ice or when we talk about, like, you know, structure versus playing positionless hockey and stuff, like, I think And this is kind of where it's our fault is that we don't get to that middle ground. You know, when we talk about positionless hockey, we talk about kind of like that's almost like it sounds like that's the thing that we think people should be doing only, you know, or when it comes to, you know, the entrepreneurs, like, you know, everybody who's an entrepreneur that's in hockey, you know, is a bad person and is out for their own self-interest and just wants to make money. So I think it's important to talk about like the middle ground when it comes to those things. And, you know, the four things that we want to talk about quickly right now is one of the entrepreneurs, two is summer hockey, three is the cross ice versus full ice hockey, and four is, you know, structure and concepts versus letting kids kind of play and let them figure the game out. So the entrepreneurs ones, you know, this is one that we got a lot of feedback on. And, you know, when we talked to Bob, we talked a lot about the entrepreneurs and how they kind of have all this power over the game and we can't make any changes because of them and how entrepreneurs are ruining the game. Let us clarify that there are a lot of entrepreneurs out there who, you know, are coaching teams or are holding camps and things like that, that do a really, really, really good job. They do a really, really good job. You know, when we're talking about entrepreneurs that are kind of ruining things and causing people stress and stuff like that, we're talking more about the people that, you know, want to keep kids on the ice all summer and want to create all these crazy select teams and, you know, want to make sure that, you know, kids are, you know, doing this and that and the other thing and kind of talking about exposure more than talking about development. You know, I think those are the people that you kind of got to be wary of and the people you got to watch out for. But at the end of the day, like, there's a lot of really good people out there that are doing great jobs, a great job for the kids. And are they making money? Yeah, they're making money, and that's okay. So want to make sure we clarify that, you know, everybody out there that's an entrepreneur in the hockey development world, you know, there's a lot of people that are doing a really good job.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, it's, you know, I got a couple of messages about that and I was like, well, what are you talking about? I mean, I'm an entrepreneur in the hockey world. I've owned my own training company for 7 years. This is going on my eighth year. You know, I make a pretty good living at it. Like, I why would I bash that when that's what I do? Like, you know, we were talking about the scummy people, the people who, you know, they only think about, okay, well, if I just stack up all these lessons, I'm going to make tons of money and all year round and telling people you got to stay on the ice. And it's really for their bank account and not for the kid's best interest. And those are the people we're talking about, not the people that do well. And, you know, I think this goes right into the next one you brought up with summer hockey. And that kind of goes into camps. And you and I, like, we went to a hockey camp together in Quebec one summer for a week long. Or 2 weeks long, I think we were there. I don't remember, a week or two. But, you know, Uncle Tim, we were messaging back and forth with him about this, and he was like, well, didn't you guys do hockey camps? And I was like, yeah, I did hockey camps, but I did one, maybe two a summer. That was it, you know, and they were fun. And my parents were not pushing me to go. I wanted to go. You know, that's something else that, like, we probably should clarify more too. Like, you know, if you got a kid who just desperately wants to be on the ice all the time, yes, there are times where you got to take him off the ice, I believe, to rest his body and his mind and stuff. But if he's always asking to go like I was and you were, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's the parents who literally are like, I'm signing you up. You're playing this. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. And there are way too many of those. And I've seen them personally.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's okay to be on the ice in the summer. You know, it's also okay to not be on the ice during the summer and, you know, work out and play other sports and stuff like that. And I think, you know, the piece of advice that I always give people when it comes to summer stuff, specifically when you get a little bit older, like the Bantam Midget, junior age, is like, exposure doesn't mean anything in the summer. So if you think you need to go to all these different places for exposure, like, you're not doing the right thing. You know, if you're going to a tournament or two for fun, you know, to go to like a Quebec or to go to a city you've never been to with like some guys that you're friends with and stuff like that, like, we did that too. You know, I think that's great. It's a fun experience. And, you know, when you talk about youth hockey and youth hockey development, it's not just about hockey development. It's about having a good experience too. So going to, you know, a tournament or two and doing it with your friends, like, I think that's great. You know, doing development, getting on the ice once or twice a week, maybe with a development coach and working on skills. I think that's great, especially when you get to the higher levels. You need to do that. You need to get better during the summer because everybody's doing that now. And if you have a dream of playing pro hockey or college hockey, you know, you gotta dedicate yourself in the summer. You know, when you get to the older ages, I'm not talking about peewees, you know, and bantams and stuff. So it's about the experience, like, you know, so when it comes to summer hockey, we don't think that you need to take your bag, put it in the closet, lock the door from April until August. You know, let the kids have fun, let them play hockey. If they want to develop and get out there with a development coach, that's great. So that's another something where there's a middle ground, right? Like we talked about, there's a middle ground to it. The funny one is the cross ice, man. The cross ice versus the full ice stuff.
Because this just incites, like, it just divides the Red Sea, and people are just either all gung-ho or they're like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever done.
Right? And the funny thing is, you know, talking to a few people, and Uncle Tim being one of them, he's like, guys, like, we do cross-ice stuff in our practices all the time. We run ADM station-based practices. Like, we hardly ever get a full sheet of ice in practice because there's so many teams and so little ice. So, like, we're doing all those things. Like, what's wrong with letting the kids – like, when they watch an NHL hockey game, they're watching a full ice game. That's fun for them. They think it's cool. They think they're playing like NHLers out there. And so what's wrong with them playing, you know, one full ice game every couple weeks or once or twice a month? And I was kind of thinking about it. I'm like, hey, that kind of makes sense. You know, like, you know, obviously there's like rules and like offsides and faceoffs and all that kind of stuff, which is kind of what Bob was kind of going against when we were talking to him. Like, why do these kids need to learn the rules? You know, so I don't know where the happy medium is there. Maybe just let them play full ice and just kind of let them go without offsides and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Cause you could teach that at a later age. But, you know, I think that was a good point. Like, is it wrong to play 10 to 15 games a year full ice and just kind of let them play? They think they're playing like the older kids or like the NHL. I don't know. Maybe that's the middle ground. What do you think?
I think I'd go with more of like once every, like, what's a hockey season for kids? 7 or 8 months, 7 months. I'd probably say throw in seven full ice games.
Yeah, maybe once a month or something like that.
Yeah. Me personally, I think 15 is too many. Like, we look at the kids, we're talking about the kids who are like walking on the ice. Like, you know, yeah, okay, totally get it. Like, yeah, do, you know, I think you got to grab things from everywhere, do different things. You don't just always do the same thing. So I totally believe in that. But I don't think they need to do it too much when they're at that cross ice age. Yeah. Just because, you know, did you see that? There was a commercial recently, I'm guessing it was by USA Hockey, or maybe it was a YouTube video, and it was like adults going out to like a lake, and they made the rink to scale the size for adults as it would be when you're a kid playing full ice. And like the net was massive and the ice was like six times the size of a normal rink. And they had the adults skating around. And I use that in our argument with Uncle Tim, not argument, our debate, you know, kind of talking back and forth with him about cross ice. And I was just like, have you seen that? Cause like that makes sense. The kids skate, I mean, compared to older, I guess we would compare them to, I don't know, peewees. They probably skate 1/7 the speed and they're half the size. So like that does make sense in relation to space and time and those things.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and again, what's the happy medium? I don't know, but there's got to be a happy medium, right? Like, yeah, like we're talking about, there's one for everything. And I think that's another thing to talk about too. You know, when you talk about hockey development, you know, and a lot of times when we talk about it, we talk about hockey development in the truest sense of the word, development, you know, like skills and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, it's about making the game fun. And if doing a full ice game every once in a while, if the kids are having fun with that, like that's the most important thing. Like, forget it. Like at that age, at the might age, it doesn't matter. Honestly, it doesn't matter. The biggest thing that matters is you're developing a passion for the game. And you look at the Scandinavian countries, the Swedens and the Finlands, when you look at their development models, you know, those might, it's about passion development. It's about getting the kids to love the game so that they want to come to the rink. And then when you get to a little bit older ages, then you can start doing the real teaching and the fundamentals and stuff like that. So, you know, we talk about cross ice, full ice. Who cares? Gold jacket, green jacket. You know, like, as long as the kids are having fun, that's the most important thing. But, you know, I think they do have a little bit more fun when they're playing smaller area games too, because there's more puck touches and more, a little bit more competition and stuff like that.
Yeah. And one of the arguments that I've heard for, you know, I want to get off this cross ice because people are just so gung-ho. And it's like, all right,
we have like a time limit here for this.
Kids' lives. Like, let's chill. It's 1 or 2 years. But anyways, I've heard the argument, well, have you ever watched a cross ice games when one of those kids is so good, the other kids have no chance. And then I'm like in my head, but if they're playing full ice and you have that one dynamite skater kid who just motors up and down the ice the entire game, the other kids literally will never touch the puck. At least if it's cross ice, it's in a way more confined space. So maybe they'll accidentally get in, you know, little Johnny's way, who's just out there bobbing and weaving. Full ice, they have no chance.
Yeah. Yeah, so, totally.
I mean, again, that makes more sense. But anyways, I digress.
Let's get off that topic.
Thank you.
And the last one I wanted to talk about was, and this is a big debate that a lot of people are having, and that's like when you're teaching hockey, you know, letting the players play versus having a little bit of structure that goes with it. And again, there's a happy medium there. Teaching a little bit of structure, teaching concepts, and again, a lot of it is just verbiage, right? Like what some people think is like concepts, some people would say is systems. You know, so in a breakout, you know, teaching the center to be behind the puck, low and slow and below, you know, is that a concept? Is that a system? I don't know. It's important to learn though, you know? So, you know, talking about D, going back on retrievals and being there to support each other, you know, is that a system thing? Is that a structure thing? Is that a concept thing? You know, a lot of it is just the verbiage that people use, because I think you can, if you ask three different people what that is, you know, one would say structure, one would say concept, one would say system. So like there's a happy medium there too. And this is one of the things that I really think USA Hockey does not do a good job of. You know, they have their things that they, I don't know if tout is the right word, but they have things that they think are important. You know, cross ice hockey. They don't go to the middle ground. It's cross ice hockey, cross ice hockey, cross ice hockey. You know, I read an ADM article where, you know, somebody from USA Hockey, when it talked about positionless hockey, you know, and he says, you know, look at the NHL. You know, look at it now and look at how they let players play so freely because they're so skilled. Well, I mean, the NHL is very structured. Like, yeah, they let their guys play, but it's also very, very structured. There's a middle ground there. So I think USA Hockey can do a much better job of finding that middle ground when it comes to all the things that we're talking about. And I think that would be able to create a lot more buy-in, you know, from a lot of people to what they're doing, which at the end of the day is the most important thing.
Totally agree. Totally agree. Couldn't say it more. You brought up cross ice hockey again, though. I feel like it should be a dollar fine every time we say cross ice hockey for the rest of this episode.
How about this? Every time it comes up again, I'll donate $20 to charity.
I like that. All right. And every time I say it, you donate 20 more.
Okay. Wait, what? How about this? Anytime that you do a humble brag, you have to donate $20 to charity.
Oh, it's like the swear jar. Okay.
Here, I'll start it off because charity's good. Cross ice hockey. Oh crap! I got $20. I got to donate. What's your charity of choice?
USA Hockey.
Oh, I give them enough money anyway. Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on from that. I think that's a really good topic of discussion. And again, that middle ground, I think it's so important to get there. I mean, forget about even USA Hockey and what we're talking about hockey development wise. Look at the world. Let's all find some middle ground on some things. But moving on, I wanted to also talk about the episode that we did with Brandon French, which we got a lot of feedback on. And we're really, really happy that this resonated with a lot of people, because mental health and addiction are, you know, I think they need to be talked about because they're big, big, big parts of growing up for kids and making sure that they're making healthy choices and stuff like that. And it's so much easier nowadays, I feel like, for kids to go down those rabbit holes than even it was, you know, when we were that age, just because they have so much more information. There's so much more pressure on kids nowadays. So I think having that conversation was really, really important. Did you get some pretty good feedback from that one as well?
Yeah, I did. Totally. You know, I mean, I think the biggest thing, still the biggest thing that resonated with me from that episode was the very end, and it was only like a minute, but he was like, you know, when I heard that Rich Clune was struggling and talking about it, and I read or whatever he said, I read or I listened to him, you know, and that made me kind of like start to think about, I need help. It was like, well, yeah, we have this platform where, you know, we've got over 40,000, at least 40,000, probably more people that have listened to it. Like, why wouldn't we talk about that during the week of the hashtag Bell Let's Talk? So, really happy. And we were able to talk about that because, you know, I know quite a few guys that have issues from head injuries, in hockey. And, you know, we know what that leads to, like depression and whatever and all that stuff. And so, I was happy that we were able to do that and hopefully, you know, help someone with addiction or anxiety or mental health issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing that I think was really important coming out of that episode, and I think about this all the time, is, you know, with everything becoming like, kids are having to deal with pressures at younger and younger ages, it seems like every year, whether that's sports wise, whether that's school wise, you know, just with all the amounts of information and content that are out there, you know, we expect kids to grow up a lot faster than we had to grow up. And I think one of the biggest and most important jobs that we have as educators or as coaches is teaching kids the ability to cope with uncomfortable situations and failures and setbacks, because, you know, kids they're under a lot of pressure, and they have a fear of failing, they have a fear of being vulnerable, they have fear of a lot of different things. And so I think for us to be able to teach kids and give them education on coping mechanisms so they can be able to handle when things don't go their way, or when they fail, or when they feel stress, I think that's, you know, one of the biggest and most important jobs that we have. And, you know, I think in Frenchie's podcast, I think that kind of came to the forefront as well, because, you know, the way that he coped with stress was alcohol and painkillers. And that's, you know, becoming more and more available to kids at younger and younger ages. The opioid crisis specifically, I mean, it's an epidemic in our country. And, you know, so I think teaching kids better coping mechanisms to handle those kinds of things rather than, you know, stress eating or turning to alcohol or just kind of like that easy fix, which Frenchie talked about, you know, teaching them strategies to better handle that.
100%. I mean, that's totally true. And I'll look at it from like the other side, like not the coaching side, but the parent side. And, you know, I think a huge part of growing up is learning to, like you said, cope with, you know, setbacks, failures, bad games, you know, like whatever. And, you know, if a coach is benching a kid, like, this is such a great life learning opportunity. And not the parent calling the coach, why is Jeff not playing? No, tell little Jeffrey, little gorgeous Jeffrey Lavecchio, tell him.
tell That's him. $20, by the way.
Oh, damn, dude, already. got me. All right, cross ice. Okay, that's 40 for you. tell that little kid, okay, you know what? This is your chance. You've got to take responsibility here. You want to play more, talk to the coach one-on-one. That is scary as a kid. I remember being so scared to do that. But my parents were like, if you want the situation to change, you got to go talk to the coach. And that's just going to help those kids as they grow up in life to be able to face their fears, to take responsibility in making themselves, put themselves in the situation they want to be in, not just turn to, you know, drugs, alcohol, whatever. I mean, I think it's a huge life lesson having to do that. So a couple things there. One, teaching your kids how to deal with adversity and stuff like that. And then two, parents, stop calling the coach. Part of this great game is that most, you know, almost all coaches nowadays have that open door policy. Tell them you want something to change, you're unhappy with something or something, whatever. You've got to go in and have a meeting with that coach, because it's such an important life lesson.
Yeah, totally. I 100% agree with you. And teaching kids, like the way that I like to talk about it when I do my team building stuff, is like teaching them to be comfortable in uncomfortable situations. And that learning how to navigate uncomfortable situations is a huge piece of not just hockey development, but just like social development, emotional development, you know, and all other kinds of development. So, I think that was, you know, when Frenchie talked about, you know, gaining the ability to cope better and finding better outlets to manage stress. Like you guys both talked about working out, like using that as like a positive way to kind of handle the stresses. You know, maybe for kids, it's, you know, calling your best friend, or, you know, maybe it's having a conversation with your mom and dad, like finding ways that when you're like feeling that stress or feeling that pressure, or whatever it may be, you know, positive ways to kind of have that, have an outlet.
So true. Absolutely love that. I love that you just said get comfortable being uncomfortable, because I don't think you and I have ever said that to each other, but that's like, I've been saying that to my clients for like 4 years, and I used it as my own, you know, one of my own like personal mottos too. Like when I was playing, like, you know, as I got older, like we've talked about on here, like I started to branch out and like work on things and watch, you know, videos of Crosby and guys that I liked that were good around the net. And then I would try and go do those things in practice, where before I would just pretty much stick to my guns. I would stick to just skating as fast as I can, trying to beat a D wide, shooting low blocker, like whatever. Does that work? But like, I never learned to do anything else. And as I got older, I was trying to get comfortable being uncomfortable. Like if I failed at something in practice once, I'd keep doing it. I'd keep doing it. And that's how you grow. So I love that.
I can't stress that enough. So and honestly, I think it was so cool for Frenchie to come on, and he was the one that approached us. He was like, hey, I think there's people that can learn from this, and we know from some of the feedback that we got that there were people that this resonated with, and a couple people saying, you know, thank you for doing that, and thank you to Frenchie for coming on and doing that. So I think it was cool to kind of rehash those last couple episodes, because they were important ones, and, you know, hopefully people can take some more out of, you know, our thoughts kind of after the fact. But now let's turn to the mailbag part of this podcast episode. So we got some really, really good questions. You know, the first one here that we wanted to talk about, and this is coming from Joe Jones, really good guy. And
Joey!
Jay Money. So his question is, the early birth month phenomenon eloquently explained by Gladwell is real. How do we assist the October, November, December birth dates overcome some of their disadvantages without penalizing the January, February birthdays to increase our player pool at older ages? So just a little bit of background on this. So Malcolm Gladwell, who I think a lot of people listening will probably know, writes a lot about social phenomenons and things like that. And he talked about in one of his books, Outliers, how he went to a major junior hockey game in Canada once, and he was looking at the rosters for all the kids. And how all, basically, like, I think it was I don't know the number, don't quote me on this, but it was a large amount. Let's say 70 to 90% of the players were born in, like, January to April, right? So why, there's 12 months in a year, why at this high level are all these kids, coming from three or four different months? And so he went on to talk about how, you know, even at the younger ages, you know, how kids that are just developing faster because they're a little bit older, you know, they make the best teams from a young age. So they get the best coaching, you know, and because they get the best coaching from a young age, now they're getting better and better and better. Where as opposed to the kids from that were born in later years, you know, they didn't make the best teams right away. So they, you know, they didn't get the best coaching. They didn't develop as much. So it's an actual real and legit phenomenon. When I did my master's program at Miami, like we actually learned about this. It's called the relative age effect, and it happens in all sports, not just hockey. And, you know, people have, you know, different sports have different cutoff dates and stuff, but it's a real thing. So, did you know about that, or had you ever heard about that?
I haven't, but I mean, I have always thought about that, because I remember, you know, going to the Central District tryouts at 15, 16, 17, and, you know, just playing other teams, I'd always look at their birthdays, and it always seemed like a majority of the best players were born in January, February, March, maybe April. Like it just always seemed that way. So it is interesting. And but then, you know, you look at a guy like Paul Stastny. He's like 3 days away from being born January 1st, you know, like 27th or 28th, I think his birthday is. So there are those guys who make it, obviously. But I mean, when I read this question on Twitter, my head almost exploded because it was the lady that you had talked to.
So Wendy Glover. So Wendy Glover actually gave a response to this. And for everybody that's listening, she is an unbelievable follow on Twitter. Like, she does a lot about youth development and not just the hockey paradigm, but in a lot of different ones. And so, first of all, one thing about Wendy, follow her because she has great information. But also, like, a couple months ago, Wendy emailed me and just like gave me all this information and all this research that she did about youth hockey development and youth kid development. And I thought that was so cool. And I wanted to say that because, you know, there's a lot of coaches out there, especially young aspiring coaches that want to get into the business and stuff. And one of the best ways to do it, and Ryan Hardy talked about it on the podcast that we did with him, like, when you're emailing coaches, if you want a job or stuff, like give them something. You know, give them some research, give them some ideas, show them some video or something like that, you know, and do it out of the goodness of your heart. You know, like, Wendy gave me this stuff. She's like, I don't expect you to give me anything back. Obviously I did, but you know, she was like, I don't expect you to give me anything back. I like what you do. And I thought this might be able to help you. So it was really, really cool of Wendy to do that. She's a great follow on Twitter. But one of the things that she talked about in regards to this question is, you know, rotate the cutoff birth date every other year, 6 months from 13U to 16U. So those players would have opportunities to be older on teams or younger on teams through, their formative years. And she talked about bio-banding tourneys have been started in USA Soccer and used in other countries as a strategy. So bio-banding, I don't know that exactly, but I know US Soccer, they've kind of grouped kids based on like what their physical maturation is, not by what their birth date is, if that makes any sense. So like maybe there's a kid that's like 11 years old who physical maturation-wise is actually like 13. And then you have some kids who are 11 years old who physical maturation-wise are actually like 9. So rather than grouping kids by birthday, they're grouping kids, but like they have these tests that they kind of do and group them a little bit more by what their physical maturation is. And USA Soccer has started to roll some of that stuff out. I read an article about that a little bit ago. But that's a tough thing. Like, that's a tough thing to, you know, to do for sure. But, you know, thinking outside the box, that's what we love. Like, that's what this podcast is all about, is about finding new ways to kind of do things. So I think that's an interesting thing to talk about for sure.
I don't even know, like, that. Yeah, when I read Wendy's responses in that question, I was like, wow. Like, this is like, how would you solve that quote unquote problem? And is it a problem? Like, it's almost like, well, that's kind of life. But then like, it's like, well, then you're kind of screwing over some kids because their parents got freaky deaky the wrong time of the year. So
speaking of that, here, I got a story for you. You'll get a kick out of this. This is hilarious. So one of my teammates at Cornell, I won't say his name. I won't embarrass him, but this is like one of the funniest stories I've ever heard. He's an unreal guy and he is hilarious. So he's married. He has one daughter and they were going for number two. And he's like, honey, like, I haven't asked for much in our marriage, you know, like I haven't asked for much, I'm not a needy person, but the one thing I want with our second kid, I want the first rounder. Like, let's do this. So we're getting a January, you know, an early January birthday. And that's all I want. It's hilarious. Like, half kidding, but half not. Obviously. Well,
no,
their daughter,
totally not.
Well, their daughter was born at the end of December. He was talking about, because as he was telling us the story, his wife was pregnant at the time, and he was like, oh man, we pulled the goalie a little bit too early. Usually it takes some time to get pregnant, and it's like it was our first try at it. And he's like, oh man, but he was laughing. He's like, I totally deserved it. I totally deserved this thing, but it's just a hilarious story.
Straight up karma. Tried to beat the system. The system beat you, buddy.
So I thought that was pretty funny. But the relative age, I encourage people to read about it. It's called the relative age effect. It is a thing. And if you go to rosters, you know, in the NHL and at the highest levels, you'll see a lot of, you know, birthdays in January, February, March, April, as opposed to, you know, the later months in the year.
It is interesting because, like, you think about, you know, I'm thinking about my 2004 team that I work with here, and we got a couple of kids on that team that are huge, like taller than me, weigh as much as me. You know, they're like one of the kids, Joey. I gotta think he's like freaking 6'4". He's probably like 205, 210. One of the other kids, Katz, he's like 6'3", 220. Like, and they're playing against some kids on that team that are like 5'7", 130.
Yeah.
You know, but think about this. If you did that bio, whatchamahoozy, with the maturation thing, like off of the physical characteristics, would those smaller guys who usually probably have to develop hockey sense because they're not as mature, because they're playing against kids who are way faster, way stronger, way more mature, maybe those skill guys develop that hockey sense out of necessity because they need to. So they like evolved their hockey brain so that they could be able to still outsmart and compete and stick with the big strong guys. So then if you take all the small guys, all the big guys out, and it's, you know, smaller kids against smaller kids against bigger kids, like maybe you take out some of those things that make the game great for different reasons.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think that's a very, very valid point. And I think another thing too is, like, you know, you talk about like these select teams and mites, like Mite AAA, like, stop. You know, you don't need to have a Mite AAA team. You know, like, put the kids out there and let them play. You know, like, it's becoming more and more prevalent nowadays, and it's just like, you know, it just, you don't need to be playing with the best players to get better at 7 years old. Like, let them go out there and play with their friends and develop a passion for the game. I think that could be a helping factor to it too.
Man, that's so funny you said that. Two things. One, one of the junior coaches who I grew up playing with, Brad Stofers, loves the podcast. What's up, Bradley? What's up, Stofes? He's a coach in Chicago for the Cougars. In the USPHL, one of those teams, he sent me a picture of a newspaper article that was talking about like super series might teams. And he didn't read the article. He's like, what do you think of this, Bex? And I looked at it and I was just like, oh my God, you have to be kidding. It was like, you have to play on this team if you're 8 and you want to make the NHL. And then he read the article like a minute later. He's like, oh wait, this is totally a joke. I messed up. Sorry for getting you fired up. And then two, I want to talk about our cousin Cody Barra, because we haven't mentioned him on this podcast. And I absolutely love the guy. He's obsessed with hockey. He's unbelievable coaching kids, just like the same as Uncle Tim, instills in them, you know, respect and hard work. And then he's also just like very good for kids. They really understand that he cares about them and is there to help them and all that stuff. But sometimes he brags about some of the kids he works with, and he's going to hate hearing this. And he's like, man, but like, he's got it. And I'm like, how old is he? And he's like 7, and I'm, or 8. And I'm like, he's 8. Like, you cannot be like, this kid's going to make it at 8. It's not, I don't care who the kid is. You can't say that. He's a baby. It means nothing.
I love it. Oh, he's going to want to kill you after this. Oh, man.
We're going to the NWHL All-Star Weekend this weekend. He's riding with me, coming with me to meet up with the Veda crew, Shrempy and Marvin Dagon, because I trained Nick Hensley, one of the girls in that.
Yeah.
What's up? And, you know, just going to hang out with the Veda guys and see what it's all about. So we're going to be in the car trapped. So after he listens to this, he's not going to be happy.
Well, you prefaced it with he does a good job, and he does. Yeah. So
he does. He's phenomenal with kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. So let's move on. Next question. And this is an interesting one, I think, for you. And this is from actually Gwen Farley Green. Great woman. Awesome. Thank you for listening to the podcast. And thank you for the question. And she says she wants us to talk about mouth guards and concussions. They should be mandatory for every child, man and woman on the ice playing hockey. The college and junior players just don't understand the link between or the physics of mouthguards helping to prevent concussions or the seriousness of them. My feeling is that if a player isn't wearing one, they shouldn't be allowed to play. We are only doing part of the job by looking at helmet construction and rules slash penalties about hits to the head. Wearing a mouthguard is so easy and needs to be educated as the other half of concussion safety. So this, I want to give this to you first. Like, I have a couple of opinions, but I want to give this to you first because this is something that certainly hits home a lot with you.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, I wish I would have known about that question. I could have done some research before talking, but I feel like I've read a couple things recently that said, like, mouth guards don't really help reduce concussions all that much in hockey. They help keep your teeth in your mouth. And I took a slap shot in the face, in my top lip, where I had to get my lip glued back together. My front, like, five teeth were loose. And I got knocked out, and it, like, a split second knockout, and it felt like lightning went through my whole body. It was I never told the trainer this. I probably should have. Like, they probably would have told me to stop playing because this was after my bad concussion. I missed the year and a half, and then it was my first year. I was playing a really good year, my rookie year in the American League, and Westgarth playing against Manchester, so LA's farm team.
Yeah.
And I'm forechecking him, and he skates back, and he just turns around and rips a slap shot, hits me right in the face, knocked out. But my mouth guard was in, and it hit me in the top lip where my mouth guard was. So, and obviously you can't take one incident and say that, well, now mouth guards don't work. I mean, kids should definitely be wearing them, I think, just for the teeth aspect. And if they help even prevent even a little bit, yes, you should all be wearing them. But I think mainly a lot of concussions are happening because of the speed and whiplash, and your upper neck muscles just start to tighten around your skull. And anyway, you know, and then obviously the brain moving inside the head at high speeds. But I don't know, like, yeah, all kids should be wearing mouth guards. Maybe it should be on the coaches. USA Hockey needs the coaches and be like, hey, make sure all your kids are wearing mouth guards. Just like I think USA Hockey needs to go to the coaches and say, hey, your kids are not allowed to hit other kids in the head. And it's on you and the refs, but it's also on you. You see one of your kids hitting a kid in the head, you sit them for one or two shifts. And if they do it again, you sit them for a period. And if you see it again and it keeps happening, they're in the stands. I mean, I think that's the only way, that the only preventative measure that we can take to help with concussions.
Yeah.
is like literally a fundamental change in the way that we coach our own teams, because the refs calling penalties is reactionary. We need to be preventative.
Yeah. And mouth guards could very well be a preventative measure to that. And yeah, you know, I agree. I think people and kids especially should be wearing mouth guards, because, you know, like you said, like, there is a little bit of research being done where it can, like, take some of the sting away from the impact, if that makes any sense. So yeah, I agree. And again, I think it's, you know, again, like we talk about, does USA Hockey mandate it or is it on the coaches? I don't know. but I think a lot of that should be on the coaches. But I think another thing to talk about, one of the reasons why I think this is a really good question, is I think it's really, really important to talk about, you know, not even necessarily teaching kids how to check. That is certainly important, but also teaching kids how to receive a check as well. You know, you look at, you know, Adam Oates is one of the most forward thinking, hockey development guys in the game. And he talks all the time. It's one of his biggest points of emphasis is teaching even guys at the NHL level how to take a check. And I think that's really, really important. And the other thing is, as coaches, I think one of the best things we can do in terms of that, but also even typical hockey development, is you should always be harping on your kids to play with their head up. Always be harping on your kids to play with their head up, head up, head up, head up, everything that they're doing, head up, head up, head up. So that way they can see things coming, because I think a lot of concussions happen, you know, everybody likes to talk about the fighting, but I think a lot of them happen when people are playing with their head down and they get hit and it's a sudden impact and they're not expecting it. So they have that whiplash and, you know, and they get hit in the head in certain, because they're looking down at the puck. So, you know, obviously your head is going to be a little bit lower and more prone to being hit as well. So teaching kids how to take a check, which USA Hockey does have information out there on, and it's on the coaches to disseminate that information, but also keep your head up, keep your head up, keep your head up. I can't stress that enough how important that is to not only being safe, but also becoming a really good player as well and being able to see the ice.
Yeah. And part of keeping your head up too is shoulder checking, you know, and we've talked about this, you and I and Adam Nicholas. And, you know, I put a tweet out, maybe it was like last week or something, that got, you know, a good response. And it was something to the effect of like, here's three things that everyone can do that take almost no energy that will instantly make you a better hockey player. And one was stick pressure. Two was shoulder checking all over the ice. And three was talking. And literally, like, and even with my AAA 18 Blues team in the beginning of the year, I told them that's those three things. I'm like, look, you do these three things, I guarantee you'll be better. And still in the beginning of the year, none of them were shoulder checking. And I'm like, look, I want your head up. I want you constantly scanning the ice, constantly. Every time you're skating up and down the ice and you don't have the puck, I want you shoulder checking, looking up, down, behind you, forward, backward. Know what's going on the ice. So then you have at least an idea of how much time you have to turn, to pivot when you get the puck. And then you also know where your guys are and stuff like that. And 100% what you just said, that sudden impact, like literally all the concussions in my career, which was over 10 of them, I believe, except maybe one that I got in a fight, but I didn't see the punch coming. So no, maybe not that one too. I didn't know I was about to be hit in the head. And even coming back from concussions and the concussions that I played through, where I would get it and then I'd still play the rest of the game and I wouldn't come out, you know, I would never miss time right after those. So my head was still messed up. I know it was. If I saw hits coming, I was totally fine. But when I didn't see them coming is when they would happen. So I totally believe in that. So yeah, coaches, stress playing with your head up all the time.
Yep. Yep, for sure. And that can be done even at a younger age. You know, that's something that can be learned. Yeah. Yeah. At a much younger age. So, you know, gosh, a big, big point of emphasis, big topic.
And one more thing I want to say, boys, girls, when you're training and you're running sprints and you're riding the bike hard and you're doing whatever you're doing, do it with your head up, because everything in life is built off habits. And I've been stressing this for years. Like, you play hockey with it. Like, I don't like using quote unquote speed ladders anymore. I don't think they do anything. I mean, you could use them every once in a while, but anyways, when we used to have to do them, all of the guys do them with their head down. They're looking straight at the floor. Well, you're working on habits and teaching your body how to synergistically work. Like, you need to be able to move your feet and have your head up on the ice. And then you got to add stick handling. So like, practice when you're running sprints, when you're doing ladders, when you're doing hand-eye coordination drill, you're doing plyos, do it with your head up always. And if you can, look around while you're doing it, get good at that. That's a huge skill that you can work on the, off the ice to be better on the ice.
Yeah, absolutely. And as Gwen says, wear your mouth guards.
And real quick, because I want to talk about this, another thing. You talked about mouth guards, and I don't know why my head went here, probably because I was hanging out with him last night. Cam Jansen, I can't remember what episode he was on of ours, but it was a great episode. You guys should listen to it if you're newer listeners and haven't heard it. Unbelievable guy, played in the NHL, willed himself there. I remember when we were younger, seeing him work out one time, and he had a mouth guard in. And I was like, what are you doing? And he's like, popped it out. Like, you can lift more weights when you have a mouth guard in, because like, when you clench your jaw muscles, it does something where you can lift more weight. So I was like, you know, he's just such a meat, and I was just thinking about mouth guards and him being like in the gym.
I love that. That's yeah. So funny. Yeah. All right, let's move on, and got one more listener question here. And this is from James Wise, and he asks, after a coach comes back from a USA Hockey coaching education clinic, what are the best ways for them to keep learning and improving, especially coaching things like skating and skills, especially for volunteer coaches who have never played at an advanced level? What do you think?
You know, that's a great question, because how many coaches at the lower levels are not guys who played. They're volunteers, and good for them. That's amazing. And like you said earlier, like, let's get some moms volunteering too. And men, let's accept them. But anyways, it is a good question, but you know, I look back to guys like Hardy and Nicholas and, you know, Brandon Arado, he never played in the AHL and now he works in the NHL, you know, like he put the highest level he played was the East Coast, and that's very high, but he wasn't in the AHL. He wasn't in the NHL. And now he's working in NHL player development. He studied, he learned. Like, the age of the internet is like so amazing. Like, you can follow hundreds of, probably thousands of people on Instagram and learn ways of thinking, learn drills. You can listen to this podcast, not a big deal. And you can learn from it. Like, you just got to go out there and you got to keep learning. HockeyThinkTank.com. You're always putting stuff up on there. Like, not a big deal. You know, like, there's ways that you need to, if you want to be good at it, like, you have to search.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot of information out there, you know, on social media, on YouTube, you know, and go to, you know, go to Hockey Canada or USA Hockey website too. You know, there's a lot of drills and there's a lot of good information on those. But the one thing that I think is important, you mentioned Adam, you know, one of the reasons why I respect him so much is he formulates his own opinions and he studies the game, you know? So if you're an aspiring coach and you want to learn a little bit, watch, you know, watch a game, you know, chart certain things, get some information on yourself. Yeah, I think that's really, really important because that allows you to formulate your own opinions where you're not just like regurgitating what other people are doing. There is a lot of really good information out there that you can learn from other people, and I encourage everybody to do that. But I would encourage all coaches out there too to kind of watch a game and kind of formulate your own opinions as well. You know, maybe do a an analysis of Steven. You talked about skating. Doing an analysis of Steven Stamkos' stride. You know, do an analysis of Patrick Laine's shot, you know, like the Finnish guys did, and disseminated that information to their whole coaching education program. And I think just coming up with your own opinions by your own studies, I think that's really good too. Jeff is on mute. Jeff is on mute.
Got me. All I said was you totally hit the nail on the head. You know, it's like anything. I want to get better at training my guys and girls that I train. Like, I have to go and do research and I have to follow, you know, the best trainers in the world. Like, I have to learn or else I'm static and I'm not getting better. So the same thing goes for coaching. You know, if you don't know anything about it, like, follow, Adam Nicholas, like, I just love that guy's brain. Like, the thing that he sent us today, and, you know, we're not going to go into detail, but like, just the way that he thinks, it's like, it seems so simple after you're like, why didn't I think of that? That just makes sense. You know? So like, go outside the box. I mean, he's an outside the box thinker. Go outside the box, start thinking some things, try them out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Especially if you're coaching little kids, totally. You're not going to mess them up that bad. Totally. They can't do anything really, you know? So like,
I like it. All right. A couple more questions, and this is a little bit more, I don't want to say personal, but a little bit more our experience that I think would be just interesting. Got a couple texts on this, and just talking about certain people that we either played with or played against. And, one of the questions was, who is the best captain that you ever played with and why?
That's such a tough question. I played with a lot of good captains. I'd have to say Mike Erickson, probably, at Western Michigan University. He was a senior when I was a freshman, and we weren't very good, but like his demeanor, like he was just the most calming presence ever. Like, do you remember Mike Erickson played in Des Moines? He had like the longest point streak in USHL history at the time. I want to say it was like 30 or 40 games in a row when he had a point. And you know, the league was so tight back then too. Like, for him to have that many games in a row at the point, like, he was just filthy. So he was my captain when I was a freshman, and he was just like, everything he said, it was just like, I think that of him, like Tom Brady, probably. Like, if Tom Brady says something to you, you listen, you know, like, that's how it was with Mike. If he said something, we listened. Like, it was just like, yep, that makes sense. Like, let's listen to this guy, you know? And that helped me, I think, be a better captain too. Cause then I took over as the C the next year, and I'm more of a energy guy and stuff like that. And Mo was very laid back, but I think seeing that 1 year before I was a captain, it helped me in my leadership like learning how to be a leader a little bit more. Cause up to that point I was always like, ah, let's go boys, you know? but that, like, that's me. It wasn't fake, but Mo was more reserved. So I tried to learn from that.
Yeah.
How about you?
It's funny you say Mike Erickson, because I think the best captain I ever had was also a senior at Cornell when I came in as a freshman. His name was Mike Knopfley. And he, very similar to what you're saying about Mike, where, both named Mike, kind of cool. But Kanoff was the kind of guy, like, again, like, he didn't say much. Like, he didn't say much, but he was like a calming presence in the room when we had a lot of personalities in the room, but he was kind of the guy to, like, when he did say something, everybody kind of stood straight up and was like, all right, what's Kanoff have to say? You know, but he just led by example. Like, he did everything right. You know, like, he did everything right. And one of the things that was really interesting about him, and Shafe tells this story all the time, because when I came in as a freshman, the year before, Cornell had, I think it was like the number 3 power play in the country. And all 5 guys from that power play unit came back the next year. So none of them were seniors on that power play unit. And the crazy thing about it is Shafe actually took Knopfley off that unit and put him on the second unit and put me on the first unit as a freshman. So he took his senior captain off the first power play unit, put him on the second, and put me, a freshman, out there. And Kanoff was great. Like, he scored 7 power play goals or 8 power play goals on the second unit. You know, our unit was great. I think we had the number 1 power play in the country that year. And that would not have happened if Kanoff wasn't an unbelievable leader and teammate. Think about guys that you played with getting taken off the top power play unit as a freshman when you're a senior. Like, how big of a disaster that would be. But that's just, like, you know, that's just the kind of guy he was. And it was awesome because I got to reconnect with him, you know, a little bit, I want to say maybe 3 or 4 months ago. He came down with his family. A couple guys came down just to kind of see Cornell. They hadn't been back since they graduated, and just kind of going over some of the times that we had. Like, he was just a great human being. Just no mate, like, very, very no maintenance. You knew what you were going to get from him every night, and just, you know, he led by example, you know?
Totally. And that, it's so funny. Like, it's, I was hanging out, the other day with a former captain of an NHL team, and his demeanor is like, just like these two mics we're talking about, like, very laid back. Like, when he talks though, like, you want to listen.
Yeah.
You know, like, when he talks, you're just like, you're like, yeah, that, you know, you know, and everybody that I've ever talked to that we talk about this guy, they only have good things to say about him. You know, it's funny. And then, you know, we talk about those two mics, and then that brings me to think of Michael Scott, another unbelievable leader.
World's best boss.
World's best boss. Yes, I love this. I bought it for myself at Spencer's Gifts.
He is great. But I think one thing that's important to talk about when it comes to that too, because we're talking about these leaders and how they're laid back, like, they were just themselves. I think one of the biggest indicators of a great leader is authenticity. Like, they're able to be themselves and people will follow them because of that. So, you know, there are other guys that do a really good job of being, I don't want to call them a rah-rah guy, but they're a little bit more vocal, you know, and they know when to say the right things, and they're social, and they are talking to guys and bringing guys together like that. You know, there's other guys like the ones that we're talking about that don't say much, but they're comfortable in their own skin. And when they talk, guys listen, and they just lead by example. You know, there's different ways of being a leader, you know, and I think about even when I was the captain at Cornell, I don't think I did a very good job of that, because, like, I thought there was this kind of, like, thing that I needed to be, like, kind of, like, almost like a hard ass and, like, hold guys accountable and stuff like that. And I probably, like, that wasn't the right thing. And I've talked about it on previous podcasts, how leaders just need to be themselves and be the best versions of themselves. That's how you can best serve your team, whether you're wearing a letter or whether you're a leader that doesn't wear a letter. So I think that's really important to note as well.
100%. Totally agree. I think that's the nail on the head, is being authentic. Because I wouldn't say that I was a rah-rah guy. Like, I was, like, when I needed to be, but I was just myself. And I think that, like, my intensity and all that, like, everyone understood that was real.
Yeah.
And I expected everyone else to want to win as bad as I wanted to win at everything. You know, and I think that everyone that I, you know, because I was a captain on almost every team I played, and I think people responded.
Oh, that's $20.
No, I wasn't. I'm not saying that because I'm saying timeout. No, $20. Let's reverse that 20. I'm saying it because we're talking about how the best captains we've had were kind of that more quiet guy.
Yeah.
But I feel like people have always responded to me, and I'm not that guy. So I don't want people who are that way to think, hey, I got to be, you know, something I'm not. If you're that guy. And whichever camp it's in, it's in the middle, it's on the left, it's on the right, whatever, like be yourself, because exactly what you said, it's authenticity. And there's nothing worse. And I'm sure you played with tons of these guys who in juniors were like trying to be the captain because they just thought it was looking good for them.
Those guys were the worst, dude.
They wouldn't talk unless the coach was in the room. You know, like those kind of guys. And when it's fake, everyone knows. And then that turns people against you. Then that creates rifts in the team. So, like, whatever you are, be safe. Because those guys are nerds.
Nerds?
They're nerds. Like, they need to be – that's just, you know, whatever. Don't be a nerd, kids. Like, be yourself. Whatever it is, be yourself and be the best at it.
Yeah, no, for sure. That authenticity piece when it comes to leadership, and I've studied leadership a lot, and you look at like the top, you know, leaders in the business world, you look at the top leaders in the sports world, you know, you look at the top world leaders around, you know, around the world, you know, they're authentically themselves. And I think that's a huge, huge, huge piece of being a good leader. So,
Look at Nerado. Look at Nerado and Nicholas. Like both of them are 100% themselves. And maybe there's some people they rub the wrong way and there's a lot of people that love them, but they're themselves and they're successful and it's authentic. So, I mean, it goes even past leaders, just like everyone, like find out who you are and be yourself and keep trying to grow and be the best you that you can be. I know that's getting like, you know, whatever, like into personal development and not really talking about hockey, but like, I mean, you know, we always talk about the two go hand in hand, like just be yourself and constantly work on trying to be the best you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I even talk about that in my team building presentation that I do, in terms of like, you know, everybody hears the analogy of like your team, everybody has a role, kind of like building a house, right? Like you need your plumbers and you need your electricians and you need your, you know, your contractor and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, coaches usually equate that to like, oh, you need your, you know, your PK shutdown guy, you need your defensive defenseman, you need your offensive defenseman. Well, like that's, let's take that a step further, because everybody has a role in the locker room too, right? You need your, you know, you need your social coordinator that's going to group the boys together after a game. You know, you need the guy who's going to be the vocal leader. You need your guy that's going to lead by example. You need the guy that's, you know, kind of funny and doesn't take it as seriously. So when times aren't going well, he kind of cracks a joke and gets everybody kind of feeling a little bit looser, you know? So like, when we talk about authenticity, I think that's important when it comes to a culture too, because you need every type of player in a room. Like you can't just have 25 like guys that are the same. You know, you need 25 different personalities, and each of those personalities has a role. And the best thing that you can do for your team is to bring the best version of yourself to that team, right? Because you need every kind of personality. You need every kind of everybody talks about the roles in terms of like what you do on the ice, but guys have roles in a culture too, in building your culture. So I think being authentic and bringing your best version of yourself is a huge part of that too.
You listeners, you can't see this, but I'm nodding my head in approval.
Nodding your head like, yeah.
You might be a worse singer than me. Not possible. Not possible. But yeah, totally. I'm on board with that 100%. And I love that you said, you know, make sure your job is to bring the 100% of you, whatever it is you bring. You're on the team for a reason. Now bring it and keep growing and keep getting better at it.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, we went through a lot of good stuff here today. A lot of good stuff. Hopefully we can keep some people some company on some drives to the rink with your mom or dad if you're a kid listening, if with your kids if you're a mom or dad listening, or a coach. And you know, it was really fun. We really appreciate all the people. We didn't get to some of the questions that that we wanted to get to here today, but we'll save those for a rainy day later on. But Jeff, I think before we end off here, you got something else you wanted to kind of mention.
I just wanted to say that too. You know, we only have so much time. You know, we try and keep this podcast around an hour ish usually so that people will actually listen to it. And thank you again, as always, for wanting to listen. But I think people should keep sending in questions to us if they have them, and we have them. We don't throw them out. And maybe we'll start in the normal podcast where we have guests on. Maybe we'll answer one question at the beginning of every one or something, because we have so many and so many good ones. But like we said, we only have so much time.
Yep.
So thank you. Keep sending them in, and it gives us just more topics to talk about, and we'll get to them. We promise.
Yep. So thanks everybody again for listening. We love you all. The feedback that we're getting and the little following that we're developing, we can't thank you enough. And we look forward to doing this every time we put it out. Keep the questions coming, keep the comments coming, because we want to give you what you want. And if there's things that you want us to talk about, we'd love to bring that to you. So thanks everybody. Have a great week. Have a great weekend. And look forward to being a part of your guys' car rides again here soon.